Welcome back to another explosive episode of Crackin' Backs, where the spine is just the start of the story. Forget everything you thought you knew about chiropractic, because today we're diving deep into the head, literally, with Dr. John Lawrence. Get ready to have your mind expanded. We're exploring the mysterious world of cranial morphology and rhythm. Could that shape and pulse of your skull be the secret to brain optimization? Dr. Lawrence is here to connect the dots and reveal how these factors are not just theories, but actionable pathways to superior brain function. Then, hold your breath as we revisit the mind-bending balloon technique that's not just a party trick, but a revolutionary way to open up more than just airways. Dr. Lawrence will explain what's popping with the functional cranial release procedure and why the sphenoid, nasal bone, and turbinates are the unsung heroes of our cranial anatomy. Plus, we're diving back into the blue sea of methylene blue, the mysterious compound that makes waves in mitochondrial medicine. Find out why it's not in every doctor's prescription pad yet and how stacking it could unlock health benefits you never imagined. And for the night owls, we're questioning everything you've heard about melatonin. For the rats, it's time for real human insights. Dr. Lawrence is going against the grain, advocating for high doses of melatonin that could just redefine your sleep and health. It's all happening here, right now, on Crackin' Backs. Fasten your seatbelts, because your journey to peak health is about to take a turn for the extraordinary.
Hey, John, you know, welcome back, man. We enjoyed you so much on the previous show that we definitely wanted to have you back, because you have so much information in that brain of yours that we wanted to make sure that we can squeeze out a little bit more for the audience to live and learn. So I am going to ask you, oh, you're welcome, man. You know, I wanted to ask you about cranial morphology and rhythm and some of the fascinating aspects of your work. And how does cranial morphology, and if you could explain that in lay terms for the listening audience, and rhythm influence brain function?
Really good question. So there was a researcher, I'm forgetting the name, but this fellow wrote a book called The Cranial Basket. Now I'm trying to remember this because it's been a while since I told this story, it's called The Cranial Bowl. Okay. It's called The Cranial Bowl. And it was a wooden bowl, and he could adjust these pegs in the bowl, and he would adjust them so it was pushing on different parts of the skull, and he would write down in journal like his symptoms. And it was just fascinating to see what a major influence that pressures on the cranial vault had on all kinds of different states of mind and different disease processes. And I found that to be the case. The influence is more than just the bones. It's this connective tissue layer that wraps around the brain and spinal cord called the dura mater. We all learn that in school, right? And that means tough mother in Latin, and mother meaning it's protecting, you know, the brain and spinal cord. And it's got 2,000 pounds per square inch of tensile strength. So it's very, very tough, and it connects and wraps around all the different aspects of the brain, and it becomes the whites of the eyes, winds into the sinuses, it attaches to the root of the tongue, down all the way, and literally out of all the exiting nerve roots, that dura attaches, and it literally has a connection with every cell in your body. And if you look at acupuncture, you know, acupuncture is a movement of chi or life force, and that life force seems to be, when they study this, independent of the nerves. So the nerves carry information, but there's this other information superhighway in the body that has to do with light and photons. And since all of our cells produce photons, they generate photons in the mitochondria. We produce light, and this light can be produced in certain frequencies and in certain amounts that can carry through connective tissue very nicely. And connective tissue layers through the body correspond to all the acupuncture meridians. And if you look at connective tissue, like if you eat sushi, right, and you get like a really good piece of yellowtail, and you see like there's that little tendinous area sometimes in that fish, and that piece of meat almost looks like a little piece of crystal, right? I mean, it's almost translucent. And when you start to look microscopically into these fibers in the connective tissue and the tendons and the ligaments, they're very like crystallesque. And in other words, they can carry light very efficiently, like fiber optic cables. And this is something that's been written about quite a bit. Chris Spencer, I think, he worked with the postal team. Was his name Chris?
Oh,
Spencer.
Yeah. Spence. His name,
maybe his first name was Spencer or Spence.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
I wish I could remember his name to give him credit for this, 'cause he's just an incredible physician. But it's been so long since I've studied it, but he uses laser and, Gonzalez, with, laser neurology, I think he calls it. There's a few different people that have kind of started, Amy, right? Are you familiar with Dr. Amy? I think he's here in Florida.
Yep. By the way, it's Jeff Spencer.
Jeff Spencer. Thank you. Right. Richard Amy was the first one I ever saw utilizing laser, with sending information in different aspects of the body, basically asking the body to move a muscle or smell a certain scent or hear something. It could be some sort of a sensory pathway, or it could be a motor pathway. And then he would laser certain points and find that all of a sudden this information was more intact. And so somehow the photons were able to bridge some sort of a blockage, right? So that life force and universal intelligence can more fully flow through the body. And this is circling back to the cranium. I look at the cranium as the skull being the entry of energy from the ether, right? So we have energy all around us, and this energy, more so through breath, we pull that energy in through our breath, through the crown, and we have these energy centers that are correlated to the chakra systems, right? In Ayurvedic and Indian, Hindu, you know, if you study these healing arts, we have these different energy centers. And so the energy center comes through, and when we have blockages in this fiber optic cable complex, then the information and the life force gets blocked, and you don't have the full expression of health and vitality, and that will show up with different people differently based on a lot of sets of circumstances, and that could be anything from the toxic load that the individual has or is currently having, their diet, their genetics, their mental emotional status, their structural status. You know, there's just so many different variables that can influence and make some subtleties in the way an individual patient might present, even though they might have maybe the same misalignment. But this whole idea of cranium was very difficult for me as a practitioner for many, many years, because the cranium seems so locked. It's like one bone. Like, how could it's such a subtle type of movement that even with the balloons that I do, which is probably some of the more aggressive types of cranial adjusting, which I love and I find amazing results with this. It's still very subtle. Yeah.
John, you know what? I'm glad you paused for a moment because I want to ask you how you treat the way you were just suggesting. That if you can go and explain a little bit more detail about the balloons you use, and you know how that actually works.
So I wrote a book called It's All in Your Head, and you can find it on Amazon. And I go into great depth on how I use a lot of different modalities. It's not just a book on endonasal, but that's kind of the topic of it. I get into, you know, how I'm using fasting and light therapy and functional neurology. And, you know, it's a deep dive into mouth breathing, and there's orthodontics in there. Because when you start getting into this subject, it's way more pervasive than what at first blush. And the reality with this technique is that when one gets proficient with it, within just a few moments, you can make such dramatic changes in someone's health and well-being by opening and unlocking these different cranial structures. And the way that I do it is I test the patient with a balance test where it looks like I'm basically just standing behind them. And it's based somewhat on some of the work that Jesse Jankiewicz talks about with advanced cranial therapy. Hmm. And I understand that he also teaches endonasal. I know he had a class here and there was half unlicensed Amish people at it. So I'm not sure I really endorse his classes so much, but I did find that some of his basic training on testing the body through this balance system process worked really well when it came to figuring out exactly where I'm going to place the balloon, because you have basically three areas you can place the balloon on each side, a lower, a middle, and an upper. And so there's kind of like a recipe. There's like a, there's going to be like a certain pattern that a patient's going to show up at. And so once you know what that pattern is, then that's one aspect of it. The other aspect that I find helpful with the balloons is eye and head positions and tongue. And so because this dura has these attachments through the eyes and the tongue and the neck and throughout, you know, all of these different structures, what I'll do is I'll have the patient go through and look up with extreme eye movements, like really look up, look down, right, left, up to the angle. And then you can throw in different head positions, flex, extension, lateral flex, rotation, and just find out what causes the most stress or strain for that individual. Now I'd say like 30% of the people be like, you know, I don't really feel really anything. It just kind of feels the same. But the majority of people, there's going to be one certain position, and then maybe it, with the tongue out, it's even more stress or strain. And I hold them in that position when I do the balloon. So I test to find out where I'm going to place the balloon. I find out where this stress point is, where I'm just like with a chiropractor doing an adjustment on a neck, right? I'm going to take them to that end point and thrust at that point, right? So it's the same thing with the balloons. I'm going to take maximum stress point to the dura, and I'm going to inflate them at that point. And I found that when I do this, and the other thing I like to do is I like to do a belt. I take a trochanteric belt and I belt that around their pelvis. And I'm giving away some big secrets here, by the way. I don't always do this, but I'm hoping that some of these things are going to be falling on the right ears, and it's going to the echo of this conversation could turn into some really major relief to some people's disease patterns. But so you take a trochanteric belt and you tighten that around, and what that's going to do is it's going to lock in that lower aspect of the dura, so that when you're looking to release it up in the cranium, it's not going to deflect. It's going to do it more. Because it, again, it's just back to when we're doing our back adjustments or our neck adjustments, we want to take it to that end range, and then we want to thrust from that point.
John, what kind of conditions would typically sorry, what kind of conditions would typically come in and you would approach them that way?
Well, I find this to be helpful for virtually all the clients. I mean, this is just part of the way I practice. And I'm fairly known for it. Most of my practice is people traveling in. And I talk about this procedure quite a bit. So I attract people that innately feel the draw, like, oh, this would help me. But, you know, I'd say the perfect client that or patient would be someone that has TMJ, they've got headaches, they're dizzy, you know, they kind of have that constellation. Like I love those people because you know you're going to change their life. TMJ tends to be a very simple type of procedure with this. Because if you think about it, the cranium is one, you know, the mandible's one bone, right? You're not going to adjust the mandible into a different position, right? But the cranium has all these different floating bones. So generally what it is, it's the relationship to the bucket handle joint that goes into the cranium here. So often people's cracking and popping gets much better once we do some balloons on them. But they do tear this disc, right? And what I found early on in practice, after an injury myself, I was just kind of give a little bit of background. I was in a really bad car accident and I went, had an MRI. They said my disc had a bulge. It was on the nerve root. I had pain down my leg. Surgeon said I need surgery. And then I found somebody that did a technique called prolotherapy. Mm-hmm. And it was with dextrose and lidocaine. And it totally cured because the pain was actually a referral from my iliolumbar ligament, which was also destabilizing that level in my spine. So this is late 90s. And since then, I've had a collaboration in my practice with regenerative medicine in, you know, stem cells, PRP, prolozone. This has been very intimate in my practice. So circling back to a TMJ case, we find that if we pepper platelets all around that fibrocartilage complex, it just regenerates that. So you could just about completely cure a lot of these people with TMJ. And I would almost say there's a very small percentage of people over the years that we haven't been able to completely fix with that protocol.
I haven't heard about prolotherapy in a while. And I remember it was a hot topic in the 90s, you know, and just like, you know, there's fads that come and go, but prolotherapy seems to be enduring the test of time.
Well, everybody wants to do stem cells and get $5,000 to $10,000 right. for the case. Prolotherapy, we charge we pay about $300 to $500 depending on if it's an extremity or a spine. But the thing about prolo is that it requires multiple treatments, right? So an individual might have 6 to 12 treatments every 2 to 4 weeks. So we still really love doing prolotherapy in a lot of situations because let's say you have a complex lower back case that comes in. Okay. Patient's got some radicular pain. They've had maybe 2 or 3 failed surgeries. They've had epidurals. They've had all these things. They say, you know, nothing really works. There's maybe I get a little bit of relief here and there. So now you've got this really complex case where you're not 100% sure where the pain's coming from. You've got your X-ray. You can see they've got degenerative changes. You've got an MRI. You can see they got bulges and stuff, but that's not telling you where the pain is. What you really need is you need something to tell you where exactly is the pain coming from that this person's experiencing. And it's usually not one place. So when you do prolo, you're mixing dextrose with lidocaine. So if you inject, say, the right SI joint, right, the patient has pain down the right leg and they've got localized lower back and pelvic pain, you go in and inject that SI joint with some lidocaine and some prolo, patient's getting a therapeutic treatment. But after that injection, you can get them to stand up and say, okay, what's different? You know, how much of your pain's gone? You'd be surprised. Some people get up and they say, you know what? 90% of my pain's gone. And then, you know, that SI joint is a big problem. And then you maybe lay them down. pepper a little bit in the iliolumbar ligament. You might get some of the sacral ligaments, the lower SI joint ligaments, some of the attachments along the gluteus, like the piriformis, some of the deep ligaments around the hip. You know, you can just start to tease these things out and so be so exacting as you document through these injections to be able to tell somebody exactly what the pain-producing tissues are. And this is one of the reasons we have a 90%+ success rate with lower back pain, because after the age of 50, disc pain is extremely rare, you know, and these people are literally like in bed when it's discogenic pain. And we've all seen them, right? They can't really move. So the vast majority of these lower back, even these more severe lower back cases, are ligamentous. They're referrals. And the ligaments carry a lot of pain. The other trick is that we find that a lot of people have something called fatty infiltration of the multifidi muscle. Now, you'll see this sometimes on your MRI, right? Mm-hmm. Spencer, I'm sure you've seen that on some MRIs, right? They notate it.
I remember hearing about this. Yeah.
We just see that and we say, well, you know, what does that really mean, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Kobe beef. Right? We have like a cow that's, you know, that can't move around, and that beef is marbled with fat, right?
Yeah.
So this is a deconditioned postural muscle. Mm-hmm. And now what if you could get that fat to turn back into muscle? Mm. That could be a huge deal, right? So
yeah.
There's a technique in Spain where they were able to process and spin the blood down in a very specific way that favored regenerating muscles. And they found, this study was basically looking at failed back surgeries. They failed acupuncture, chiropractic, physical therapy. And all they did is go in and pepper this growth factor concoction into the multifidi muscles. And they found that these fatty infiltrations were pain producing. And I found that too, because sometimes when we're going through these, I call it a lidocaine challenge, right? It's Prolo, but it's like a lidocaine challenge, lidocaine. A diagnostic procedure.
Yeah.
So oftentimes when we have back pain cases, we can see that on ultrasound. Sometimes it's very severe, there's a lot. You lose what's called the starry night pattern of the muscles. And you know, if there are any young clinicians or even old clinicians watching this, I imagine you probably have a number of chiropractors that follow you on this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get good with ultrasound. I mean, it's not easy. It takes years. You can get pretty good with some major joints though in just a few months, but what that allows you to do is to see where the pain is, because you can see inflammation. And if, you know, my chiropractic upbringing was x-rays, right? And you have the x-rays and that x-ray gives you some patient compliance because you're showing them something objective, and something about throwing that x-ray up and pointing out these things in the bones. It's like people are ready to accept your recommendations, right?
Yeah.
So being able to look inside the body and show people like what's really going on really makes a big difference. And especially if you're going to be getting involved in regenerative medicine, this all needs to be done under diagnostic ultrasound. But if you're just doing it just to diagnose people and then prescribe physical therapy and chiropractic, I think that this could be just an absolute home run for any chiropractic office to adopt, right? So we can see that we can see the fatty infiltration. We do the injections. We inject the ligaments. We inject the fatty infiltrations, and that's a really nice, complete type of procedure for a spine.
Yeah, I think diagnostic ultrasound is undervalued. It's everybody's so quick to go ahead and MRI, and I think that we can really empower each other by using diagnostic ultrasound and learn more about it. So I absolutely agree. And it's a great teaching tool for somebody, a diagnostic tool and teaching tool for the patient.
Well, you can see if somebody's got an effusion of their knee, right? And you can see if their collateral ligaments are all beat up, their their cartilage. And then you can prescribe laser, right? I mean, if you have a practice like mine where you have a medical staff that can do injections that are regenerative, like platelets or, you know, some sort of a stem cell type of procedure, then it makes even more sense. But you don't need to have that type of practice for this to have a lot of value. And these days you can pick up an ultrasound on eBay for, you know, $1,000 or less.
Yeah. Diagnostic ultrasound, for those who are listening, not therapeutic ultrasound you're referring to.
Diagnostic, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Hey, John, I would like to go into a conversation we had last time we were together about endocrinial work. You mentioned on the first show you went against Uberman, which I love that you took a stand on a belief system and his guests when it comes to melatonin. And you know, they have their opinion and this study that was done on nocturnal rats. And I love the conversation. If you could revisit that and just go a little more in depth with your consideration for high doses of suppositories.
Well, yeah. There's three arguments that I've heard. One from Peter Attia, that is that you should stay away from melatonin altogether. And if you do take melatonin, it should be 1 milligram, right? Or less. Mm-hmm. There's another fellow, Jack Cruz, who's a neurosurgeon, a brain surgeon, that feels that it could damage your retina. And that was based on an albino rodent study. So we don't even need to get into that. It was like kind of, but it's an agenda. Like I feel like there's an underlying agenda by these doctors because they've been brainwashed probably through their medical training. And they're just, they have to be against it. And sometimes because there's just really very little that any research that's out there that shows melatonin in some sort of a negative light is flawed because there's nothing that melatonin isn't good for, because our bodies at such a deep level produce so much of it. Each mitochondria produces melatonin. So it's something that's so ubiquitous throughout our body that it's impossible for us to have some sort of a negative aspect to. So Huberman's argument is that he personally gets nightmares with it. So I think that's his bias. And it can be such, you know, I think that what happens for some people is that it brings online such powerful mitochondria function that you start to process unconscious thought forms, right? And so I do believe that some people that are getting nightmares, they're not able to keep those memories suppressed. There's something triggering them to start to surface. There's just no way that melatonin is causing some sort of dark thoughts to come out, that those thoughts are already within you. So the melatonin's giving you an opportunity to process through it. And it's fairly rare, but I would say that because melatonin can also detox the brain from heavy metals, melatonin can also kickstart your immune system. So if you've got a lot of, say, neurological Epstein-Barr or cytomegalovirus or HHV6, candida, I mean, there's a variety of different types of infections that the body can be overrun with, that all of a sudden we start to mount an immune response, and then we may have some negative side effects in a short period of time while the body's doing some house cleaning, right? And they name this Herxheimer reaction, right? This is like a cleansing reaction from a good medicine. And sometimes that can happen for a couple of days. If some individuals will wake up feeling very groggy when they start taking higher doses of melatonin. Mm-hmm. We introduced a 200 milligram bar that also has a cannabinoid called CBN, which I find to be one of the best cannabinoids for sleep. We call it the Sandman bar. And this allows you to break this up into smaller pieces, but yet allow you to kind of work your way up into these super physiological dosing. And so why would someone want to take a high doses? It could be for a few reasons, and I'll try to point out some of the more obvious ones. Would be if an individual is under a lot of stress, like traveling, that might be a good time to take it, not just with the time change, but just traveling in general. Somebody has some sort of, if they're an athlete and they're competing somehow, maybe it wouldn't be the best time to start taking high dose, but that might be a good time to cycle on higher doses. If one had an infection.
Hey, John, I'm gonna pause here for a second, because I gotta give you a little plug. I actually tried your Sandman, and I gotta say, it knocked my ass out. I had the best night's sleep I have probably had in a month. And so my question from a new user is, do you, like you said, is this something that people are taking these high doses every day or only in times of need? And where are you finding your research to back all this stuff up?
Well, most of the research is in my book, which again is on Amazon, Melatonin Miracle Molecule. There's literally some guidelines that are out from some of the biggest researchers, Russell Ryder being one of them, who's a PhD, MD. This guy literally has been researching melatonin exclusively for almost 60 years. He's got 4,000 to 5,000 papers with his name, like literally, like it's crazy. He's committed his life to melatonin. So he's involved with setting some standards with, like, for instance, COVID, right? So they have on certain days, different dosage recommendations. And so for like an average adult male, you know, the dosages start to go into the hundreds of milligrams based on, you know, these researchers. It seems that there's kind of two camps. There's a more conservative camp, and then there's a not so conservative camp. And there's not really a reason to be conservative with melatonin because there's no toxicity to it. Right. Mm. So let's say that, you get COVID or you get Epstein-Barr, or you have Lyme disease, or you have some infection, you're dealing with mold, whatever it is, and you want to start taking melatonin, and maybe 100 milligrams would do the job for you, but you take 400 milligrams, right? It would absolutely not make any difference, right, that you're taking an extra 300 above 100, except that maybe for the first few days, you might be a little extra groggy in the morning until your body adapted to that amount. But if you get light in your eyes as soon as you wake up, which Terry, I'm sure if you did that for a few days in a row, you found that maybe you weren't as groggy.
Oh, absolutely. I get up. That's the first thing I do. I walk outside. So yeah, it felt great. I mean, I went from about half an hour after taking it, I was out. I didn't wake up until the morning and walk outside, have my coffee, and within 30 minutes, I'm feeling great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So you imagine how nice that would be is if you're traveling. Like I'm headed out on a trip to Portugal, and anybody that's been watching HBO, they've got this show called 100 Foot Wave, right? And this guy—
Are you going to Nazarene?
Have you guys seen that?
Are you going to Nazarene?
I'm headed to Nazaré. I'm going to Nazaré. I'm staying with Garrett in his house, and HBO is going to be filming me do balloons and treatments on all these different surfers. And so, I leave next Tuesday.
So I have a patient of mine who's going to be
the Sandman with me.
Oh, hell yeah. I have a patient of mine and a friend of mine that used to race with my son. My son was a pro motocross and mountain bike racer, and his name is Cody Purcell, and he's going to be competing and surfing there for the first time. So he just left yesterday to head out there.
Clay?
No, his name is Cody Purcell.
Cody Purcell. Okay, I'll look out for him.
Yeah, look out for him. That's and cool. Let him know that you know me and all that. He's just a great kid. And my son is in Lisbon right now. So, yeah, Portugal's a hot spot. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah, that's where I'm flying into is Lisbon. Well, I'm going I'm going to meet Garrett in Austin first. And I guess Kelly Slater is like, they're opening a new surf camp or like
in Austin
these waves or something like that. And then we're both flying to New York and then to Lisbon after that. I was introduced to Garrett, and Garrett and I just have absolutely hit it off, and his family. And I spent Christmas on the North Shore with them. And he and I both share this really interesting because we both grew up in Hawaii, and we both were in special education classes as kids in Hawaii. Not a place you really want to be in special education classes in Hawaii, because there's not like a middle ground. You're either like full on short bus to school, which you know, I used to have a lot of shame involved with that. And now I look at it as a badge of honor. You know, this was these stressors early in life are what give you the motivation to, you know, kind of step up in your own way. And sculpt you as a person.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, I think Spencer still rides in the short bus just because he's short.
Yeah.
But
sometimes I feel that way. Yep.
Oh, man. But all right. No, I'm excited for you. I mean, that's going to be that's a great wave. I'm excited for you to be a part of that. And I think you're going to have a great time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I actually have a question. Going back to the nasal balloon, you know, we grew up a lot with like SOT and cranial work and stuff like that. What are you finding out with the balloon versus manually moving the sphenoid and other cranial bones? What do you find the difference of some of the manual techniques for you versus your balloon?
Well, I think that there could be a place for both of them. I will often palpate the skull, and I've been trained in SOT, so you know I'm able to go in and test all the different sutures and bones to feel where they're fixated and where they're locked up and what type of subluxations they might have. And then after I do the balloons, oftentimes I'll go in and do some palpation and kind of ease some of those cranial structures into the proper position. So I think they can be done together quite effectively. But you're not going to really release that deep dural adhesion, right? So people they're just so locked up in here, they can't breathe. You know, their nasal passages are collapsed, the maxillary bones are collapsed. And you'll find when you do that people's neurology improves quite a bit. One of the testing procedures that I recently, I recently started using is called Right Eye. And this is another, I think, a great tip, like the ultrasound machine for, you know, a clinician if they're treating a lot of neurological conditions. Then the Right Eye setup is like a computer, and it tests functionality with something called a saccade, which is a fast eye movement. How accurate it is. Can people hold their gaze, right? Gaze holding, gaze stability. And then pursuits, are they able to pursue, you know? And these are all within horizontal and vertical planes. So you get these graphs. And so we can see some changes just with the balloons alone, because we know the impact that this is going to have on the eyes. But I don't leave it at that. I actually like to drive those neuroplastic changes, and I'll have people do gaze stabilization exercises. Yes, yes. And no, no. Have them do something called eye pinball, which are numbers that they go back and forth with. There's just a number of different types of functional head and eye strategies that you can utilize with your patients that can have big impacts. And so what I find in practice so often is you'll have the patient that comes in and their necks are really stiff. You know, you know those people when you're trying to adjust them And you're like, relax. And they're like, well, I am. And it's like, no, really relax. No. I, you don't understand. I'm totally relaxed. And you try to adjust them and they're just, you know, it's like trying to adjust a log. Right. And what's happening with those people is it's not their fault, but they're dystonic, right? They have a dystonia. And so the eye muscle, the eyes are communicating with the inner ears and the neck muscles, right? So the whole vestibular system and the ocular system is basically appreciating the head velocity, where it's moving, its position, and it's sending information to the neck muscles so that things can be balanced, right? Because when you turn your head, certain muscles need to relax, other muscles need to contract. And when these things aren't really calibrated, it's a lot of noise, right? So if the neck muscles aren't getting really specific, clean information, then all the muscles kind of clamp down and you lose this, the maps, you know, like you don't have really good mapping and grids of your muscles. And so there's not a lot of good control. You'll also see these people when you do deep tendon reflexes that kind of their body jumps, right? Instead of just that real clean reflex, you know, you could come up on their shoulder and just kind of karate chop them and you'll see they'll kind of lift up. And a lot of these people have a lot of neural inflammation of the brain as well. And so that these nerves just start to all fire together. And this can start to have a lot of effects on how these people are holding adjustments and whether we're able to even adjust them. So this is a really good case to do two things, two very important things. One is we want to address any type of inflammation in the brain functionally. And we can talk, melatonin is a terrific one, you know, a very easy supplement to look at with high dose melatonin. I also think high dose, or not high dose, but just methylene blue can be a really good recipe. And then there's a suppository we make called Lucitol, which has quercetin and curcumin, fisetin, sterile stilbene. It has a number of these different plant polyphenols that really quench glial activation and basically just neural inflammation in the brain. So this can be really good to do for a few days. Hard to get a lot of those things orally. These polyphenols just don't really absorb orally. So this rectal delivery can really, really move the needle. And some clinicians are literally doing IVs with these substances, but they're incredibly expensive. And you can do basically the same thing in your clinic with a suppository that some of these fancy medical clinics are doing with some of these European plant polyphenol IVs. So you do that. And then the second thing is you get them to do some gaze stabilization and you fix their gaze fixation, their smooth pursuits, and their saccades, which is really fairly simple to do. Carrick has some great classes. You can take a really deep dive into some of this stuff, or you can simply take his vestibular. I think they have like vestibular 1, 2, and 3, like that module. Spencer, I think you've taken that. Yeah. Maybe we took it together even.
Mild traumatic brain injury, we took.
The TBI, yeah.
TBI.
Well, that program. One's really similar. It's a very similar kind of program. But you'd be surprised how many people's chronic subluxations are coming from their neurology. And if you fix both of them, that vertebrae literally slips in and it stays, right? And then if it doesn't stay, the other thing to consider would be the ligaments around those areas, because we don't want to be adjusting hypermobility, right? This is the area that we really want to try to stay away from, the hypermobile segments. And unfortunately, those are the easy ones to adjust. Those the patients come in and it's like, click, oh, doc, you're great, right? That just like went right in. But are you really doing that patient a favor? Are you making something more hypermobile? A lot of these like more deep subluxations are the occiput, right? And these are the ones that I think, especially a lot of our newer clinicians, our newer chiropractors, they're not properly trained, like we were, you know, back in the early 90s and the 80s and so forth with being a little bit more aggressive, I think. doing some of these occipital lifts where you're really taking that atlanto-occipital junction out of extension, which just about everybody has, getting in and really mobilizing some of those upper thoracic, lower cervical vertebrae. And if you need to refer people out for something like prolotherapy or PRP, you know, certainly we do a lot of it here in Sarasota. If you're anywhere around this area, we would be happy to accept those referrals. But this is the model that fixes people, like, goodbye, have a nice life, right? Then if you want to do this chiropractic, like, family plan, right, and you're addressing the subluxations, but to have someone coming in for chronic pain, I think that if there's a way to kind of get that person so that they're stable and they can enjoy, you know, the less progressive arthritic patterns that will develop if these things are not treated properly, makes more sense.
Hey, John, I'm sure you hear about it all the time, and I just cringe every time I hear somebody want to talk about a sleep apnea, you know, the CPAP machine. That seems to be a lot more pervasive now because it's a business. And yeah. I just know that what you're doing is, it can really solve a lot of people's problems. For those out there that have snoring issues or sleep apnea problem, and they were prescribed, how would you approach somebody like that that came in giving you that little summary? How would you approach them first?
Well, there's some thoughts around inflammation in the nasal passage, in inflammation back even towards the throat, the weak tongue muscles, right, that are allowing that tongue to fall back and obstruct the airways. The individual oftentimes can't breathe very well through their nose, and if they can, then some of these other things can be at play. So opening up the nasal passage can be the magic bullet for a lot of these cases. And sometimes you have to be a little bit more comprehensive with them. And we like to swab people's nasal passage to rule out something called Marcon's. We use another product that we manufactured called Glutastat. And all of my patients, I start them out with a 30-day sinus protocol. And I tell you, you'd be surprised how many people have inflamed brains because they don't have proper sinus and nasal hygiene. So this Glutastat is basically essential oils and glutathione and NAC, colloidal silver. And we found that doing this 4 to 5 times a day for 30 days eradicates, in most cases, even the more severe infections one of them is called Marcon's, which is an antibiotic resistant colony of staph. It's really nasty. So a lot of people have stuff in their nasal passage. There's biofilm. The essential oils are really key to break up the biofilm. They're very antimicrobial. They're not going to cause further resistant strains. These strains can't build tolerance and resistance to a lot of these essential oils. So those work really well. The other possibility is that the individual may want a mouth tape, right? So you've got the nasal passage open, but you have to kind of retrain people. So yeah, now that I can breathe through my nose, well, let me train myself at night so I'm not, you know, going back, the mouth opens. And then when the mouth opens, the tongue falls back. And then these bones collapse in because the tongue isn't held forward and pushing on these front teeth that are going to maintain that width of the maxillary cavity. And so when that's not happening, this starts to fall back in. And if you don't address those things, you do the balloons on people and, you know, you could be, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, they're congested again. They've collapsed back in because 8 hours a day, they're like this, and it's just like braces pulling the skull back into a narrow position.
There's a lot of moving parts. It's pretty cool that, everybody's, if you don't clear up one thing, then the other, may not work as effectively. So it's a matter of determining all that. That's great.
If an individual is going to really be wanting to focus on sleep apnea, they have to be able to do some functional medicine to lower inflammation in the body. Because even if they don't have a nasal infection, you have allergies. The nasal passage is like the canary in the coal mine. If I've got some inflammation in the body, I'm going to get congested. And that could be more pervasive at night when I lay down. Mm-hmm. So you address that. You address nasal hygiene, mouth taping, open up the nasal passages. And most cases with sleep apnea, not only are they going to be better from their sleep apnea, but they're going to feel a lot better in a lot of other ways.
Yeah. Oh, huge. Yeah. John, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to go into one of our favorite sections of our podcast called Rapid Fire Questions. And they require you to answer brief, concise, and to the point, which, I always say that, but we get carried away with some of the conversation. These are easy questions. They're fun. And if you're ready, I'm going to throw out one of five. Are you ready?
Yep.
As a lover of kite surfing, what to you is the draw, and where is your favorite spot you have kite surfed?
Well, it would have to be Kailua Bay in Hawaii, which is my hometown. And you're weightless. You're out there. You're skipping along. You're enjoying nature. You're one with the wind. There's nothing like it.
Oh, that's nice. All right. Good job. Question number two, best tip to change the mindset of an addict, no matter what the addiction is.
The best tip. Deep forgiveness, right? Forgiving yourself for what you have inside of you and not projecting, right? Because most addicts are everything's, they made me, right? Everything's a projection that everything outside of them is creating this emotional state and this resistance to like the reality of life. And to realize that these drivers of our perception are within us. And then NAD, I'd throw some NAD in there with like the NAD max suppositories versus IVs. Really, really good benefit from with improving the mindset and emotional status with addicts with NAD refueling.
Hmm. All right, I'm gonna go off track for a minute. How does that work in biochemically in the body? NAD, why would that?
It has to do with the mitochondria. So it's a mitochondrial story. And poor sleep and drugs radically deplete NAD levels. And so a lot of times when addicts just feel so bad, it's because they're not, they're so depleted. They don't have the mitochondria support to drive their neurotransmitters and all the other functions. So they feel miserable. And they found that when they supplement with NAD levels, that addicts are able to detox much quicker and that they're able to return to being social and happy much, much more rapidly.
Oh, John, you're the best, man. All right. Question number three. What do you feel is the most overrated health fad out there that, in your opinion, is just that, a fad?
Overrated?
Yeah.
Boy, overrated. I don't know. Let me think of one that is overrated. Well, Mercola feels like cryo is overrated. This would probably be a good conversation. So, last time I met up with with Joe Mercola. It was backstage at in what's called the green room before he was going to go on stage at this biohacking thing. And he comes up, he says, "Oh, John, I got all this great information I'm gonna be dropping at this thing, and like how bad cryo is because it elevates cortisol, and cortisol is so bad for you." And I kind of sat back and I thought, well, and it raises dopamine too, right? And I'm like, but it raises cortisol for a short period of time, but then if that individual feels better for the rest of the day and they have lower cortisol, would it be a net gain? Because you'd have a net lowering of cortisol over the whole 24 hours. And he kind of looked at me and he scratched his head, "You know what? You might be right." But he still went out there, and I mean, he was putting down about every single biohacking, keto. He had something to say bad about just about everything.
I love it. That's great.
But I'm a fan of cryo. I think it can be good. But obviously, anything in excess, you might want to check.
Great. Question number four. Favorite book to read when you are on vacation? In other words, which one are you taking with you when you leave town?
There's a book called The Keys to Ultimate Happiness. And see if I can remember this guy's name. Yeah, I'm drawing a blank, but it's a spiritual book, and it's I wish I could remember. I'm going to have to look it up, and then you can put it in the show notes. Yeah. Okay. It's an enlightened man that wound up having a center in Sedona, and he just talks about the way he sees the world. And a lot of it has to do with this conversation we had earlier about projection and about really owning everything that's happening and everything that you're experiencing.
Is it Robert Sheinfeld? Is he the one?
No, Keys to Ultimate.
No, I was trying to find it for you. Yeah. Yeah. I was looking. All right. So the keys to ultimate happiness.
You can't find the book anymore.
Oh.
It's out of print. Well, might be lucky.
Okay.
Here it is. Keys to Ultimate Freedom by Lester Levinson.
Ah, okay.
And here is a copy on a website called amusespot.com, and it's $200 for a used book.
Oh my God.
What?
It's that good.
All right. When was it?
It's a spiritual book, right? So sometimes I want to be spiritual and sometimes I want to be in the science.
Yeah.
And I find myself more often either with the science, I'm either listening to a podcast or I'm working on a chapter in a book, because I've got like four that I'm working on right now, and I'll be in a chapter and I'm like researching a subject, and then I'll start to look for research surrounding that, right? And then that'll lead to like something else and something else and something else, and it rabbit holes into all kinds of fun things. So you're reading all these different journals at that point. But that can be, awesome. For me, like that's like going to Disneyland sometimes.
Oh. Question awesome. Number five, John, and the last one. Best morning wake up brain routine that you do? Don't say cup of coffee.
my morning routine, how about this is my morning routine, is I wake up at 4:30. I crawl into my soft hyperbaric chamber till 5:30. Okay. So my last hour of sleep is in the hyperbaric chamber. And then after that, I'll make a matcha with a little bit of honey. I'll have a matcha. And then I will oftentimes go to the beach. And it's actually what I've been doing is taking my dog in my golf cart to the beach, because it's still dark at that time and there's nobody on the beach and you're not you're not supposed to have dogs. So I'll run her up and down the beach when it's dark. Then I come back and I'll take my bike to the beach and I'll go do breath work while the sun comes up. Right. And this is just, I think it's one of the best morning routines that you can do. I have an app that Wim Hof has on my phone, right? It's the Wim Hof app. Yeah. And I set that for 40 breaths and I have it as a fast breath. And I'll do four rounds of that with breath holds as long as I can go. And I use a methylene blue, nano gold, nano silver eye drop. It's called Blue Eyes, something that we make as well. I'll drop that in the eyes and then I'll sun gaze, you know, I'll watch the sun coming up. And then I'll kind of roll into doing some stretching and some yoga and some Tai Chi and some meditation. And then I go home and I jump in cause I'm sandy, right? So I kind of hose off and then I get into my sauna, right? The sauna's hot. I get in there, I sweat for maybe 10 minutes. Then I'm in the shower and then I'm ready to go to work. And that's probably 5 days a week, just like that.
Oh, that is,
well, no cold plunge.
Well, the cold plunge comes in when I get back from the beach. I have not been doing the cold plunge as much. I relocated my house and it's kind of funky where the cold plunge is, but, I've gotten away from the cold plunge a little bit lately. Yes. But it's maybe once or twice a week, I'll do the cold plunge.
All right,
John, I'm going to wrap up with, just two more questions for you. You know, one being is the last one is, you know, what you want to leave the audience with as, you know, as part of your commentary. But I wanted to ask, I know you're an artist and your preferred medium is oils. Are you still painting? Do you still do your painting?
Yes. Like the one, this painting here.
Yeah.
You see this behind here?
Yeah.
This one, I kind of came up with this when I was watching Carrick, right? And this is a brain.
Ah, okay. And yeah.
The brain is a, you know, so you have the life force coming out of the ether up into the, you know, into the spinal cord. And then you have this beautiful neurological paradise. And then here, standing on crystals of knowledge, you got the optokinetic tape. You know, and the done with the hands. This is like functional neurology.
That's a whole hand. Yeah.
So I actually gave a print of this to Dr. Carrick probably about a decade ago. And I know he has this sitting in his home.
That's really cool.
That is.
Yeah, that's kind of my, you know, kind of chiropractic theme. Here, let me show you. This is my my kind of waiting area here. So this is where you walk in to go back. And so this is,
You got all sorts of,
this
paintings.
Is called, that's, it's cool. All in your head. So you've got the conscious and the unconscious.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right?
Wow. That's
and
cool.
So if we could like own the fears in our unconscious mind, right? So here we have the fear. See this, see a woman swimming with a great white shark, the ultimate act of fear, facing your fear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you literally throughout the whole clinic, I'm not selling any of my paintings. I showed in galleries for a while, but, and we're kind of coming back here. Somebody's in the room right now. We're actually doing a procedure in there. Otherwise, I'd take you through there. Maybe on another one of our podcasts, we can literally go through the whole clinic and do a tour.
It'd be the art show. Yeah. You know, I find it interesting because earlier in our conversation during the podcast, you talked about using two sides. Well, you didn't clearly say two sides of the brain, but you did mention about, you know, being able to, you know, understand, you know, being entertained by the abstract. And then, you know, you'll like writing a book and then being creative in that way. And then all of a sudden going into the science end of it. And, you know, that is, there was a book many years ago called The Artist's Way. And it talked about really you are that person that exercises both sides of the brain. I mean, I'm a photographer, so I understand what it takes to be creative, and that satisfies that side. You also mentioned, and I had read a conversation that you had in regards to, the artistic expression that you feel are the aspects of healing. Do you want to describe a little bit more of that, that maybe I think a teacher had shared with you once at some time?
Yeah, I find that as a clinician, there's oftentimes a lot of different directions that we can go with our care, where we put our hands on people, which vertebrae we're going to. I mean, there's all these techniques, right? But eventually, if you really talk to the gurus, they're going to say, yes, you know, this is, but sometimes they don't always stick to that exact, you know, there's this sea of information that we have available to us if we can get into that flow state. And that flow state is more that artistic aspect, I believe. It's like we have this linear, mathematical, factual mind that is putting 2 + 2 = 4. You know, it's like we've got all of the data that we've collected from chiropractic school or whatever other school that we've had. And we go in and we sit there with a patient. And if we just stuck to that raw mathematical equations, we're missing out on a whole host of information that we might be able to gather about that patient. Intuition is a real thing, right? We think, okay, an intuitive practitioner or whatever. If we were to define intuition as the ability to respond to low threshold input accurately, then we could start thinking about intuition as, well, there's a lot of information coming at me and maybe I can't put my finger on it so much because it could be all of that nonverbal communication that I'm catching from the patient, along with a certain odor and along with the way that I could see that they walked, right? And it's like all that data is hitting your mind, but your thinking mind can't map all that stuff out, but you know it, right? And you just have this knowing inside of you. Yes, this person's liver is in, this needs to be addressed first, right? This is where we're going to go first.
Love it.
And that's probably the right decision to make because you're following that intuitive, gut feeling.
Love it. I absolutely love that because I feel that, as seasoned doctors that we are able to use that intuition more accurately or more, use it more, use our gut, based on a lot of the little things that we could pay attention to. John, we want to wrap it up. And this was fantastic. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners and viewers with?
Boy, I feel good about the conversations that we're having here. And the ears that this is landing on, I have a good feeling about it, And if that's you and you're sitting there and you're listening to this and you're getting excited about some of these things and you're seeing how some of these things could not just improve your life, but some of the lives of people that you're putting your hands on or working with, I'm also available. If you want to reach out, you can find me on Instagram at Dr. John LaRance. We have events here. Love to have you come for some of the events. We have Ben Greenfield that we're hosting. Mariel Hemingway. I don't know if you guys remember her. She's a big actress in the late 70s and 80s.
Sure.
She's got a big podcast. She's actually going to come.
Wow.
And it's going to be December 8th. Elements of Vitality. Maybe you guys can make it.
Oh my gosh. That would be great. Yeah.
We'll have a party.
Yay.
I love it.
John, you're spectacular, man. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for sharing all that knowledge.
And have a fantastic time in Portugal, man. Enjoy it. That's like when the nature's wonders, that wave. So
yeah,
have a great time.
What a spiritual place too, huh?
Totally. Well, yeah, send me a picture of you stand by that lighthouse. And looking at that big big ass wave. I can't wait to see that.
Oh, I know. Me either. Well, apparently Garrett said his house is literally right there by the lighthouse. So I just can't. Wow. I'm like, pinch me. Like, is this real?
That's so cool. Well, congratulations, and I'll send you the name of Cody, and if you happen to see him, tell him I said hello, please.
Will do. All right. Well, thank you. Blessings.
John, great man. Appreciate your everything.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Kraken Backs podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Kraken Backs Podcast. Catch new episodes every Monday. See you next time.